session number 16843, Reel 2.
Commander Crisp, Reel 2.
Carry on.
Yes, please.
Well, anyhow, we got to Malta, no trouble. And then, of course, off we went with the cruisers, deeper into the Mediterranean. And before we came to the Strait of Pantelleria, I think it was, we were ordered to put on, to come onto the main deck and remain there with these cots, we lie down here, there, everywhere, as Lucius went through the Straits of Pantelleria. The ship was shaken full speed, of course, went right through, and fortunately nothing happened, and when we got out, there was the Eagle and some of the Mediterranean fleet waiting to meet us. And so then we went merrily on our way, and off we went to port side. Alex and I was taken to port side with a lieutenant commander, who was a boom defence officer, and one other. And then we had to go to Navy House, to settle in at Navy House for 3 weeks to wait for HMS Protector, the net layer. Well, whilst I was there for 3 weeks, the first lieutenant gave me two or three jobs. One of them was to take a confidential letter to Alexandria, HMS Nile. And it was quite, well, it wasn't amusing, but they gave me a Colt, that's the old revolver. And two armed sailors took me to the station and locked me in a compartment. Then off we went to Alex, through Ishmaelia, of course. And when I got there, there were two armed guards waiting for me to unlock the door, let me out, put me in a taxi up to the Nile, where I delivered the message, got a signature, etc. Then they brought me back, took me into a hotel, put me there for the night. In the morning, same routine again. Breakfast, took me, the two armed guard, put me back in, to the railway station, locked me in a carriage by myself, down to port side, where I was met again, unlocked and let out. A sort of king's messenger, hand messenger. Well, that was all right. It bided the time for a while anyhow. And then the transport came in with, full of sailors. And they gave me the job of going to the transport to take charge of this large draft. And I had to tell the chaps, of course, that although they'd come the long way round to get here, they weren't allowed ashore that night. Well, there weren't many grumbles. So kept them there for the night, and then the next day they all went ashore, then all distributed round the fleet. Little job, didn't mind that. Then the next thing that happened was the army coming in. They were landing their tanks, getting ready for a push, I think. And one of their tanks, one of the tank carrying, whatever they were, had broken down. Could I, in any way, as a bosun, supply wires to uphold the thing? Well, we had no wires, we had nothing. So I'm afraid nothing happened. And then Protector came in, HMS Protector, and the senior officer, Lieutenant Commander Gilbert, he was my senior officer, boom defence officer, and myself. We boarded Protector and then made for Souda Bay. Well, just before we got to Souda Bay, they gave me the job of putting down or anchoring a light buoy at the entrance to Souda Bay Harbour. That went off all right. And then we were landed. And we were then, the two officers, we were put up at this a small house which housed army officers and RAF, well, one from the Perth, HMS Perth. And then the two seamen, they were billeted ashore. I should say there was, of course, a a signalman too. But when we got on the jetty, we found there were no cranes, no nothings. And all we had was a shed and two seamen to look after all the harbour defences. Well, we had indicator nets outside, beyond Souda Fort. They were the nets that the submarine would get into. The nets would drop over, of course, try and hold the submarine, and then a flare would come up, calcium flare. Then you came further in, and they were what were called anti-boat nets, this side of Souda Bay Harbour, that stretched right across on both sides, but left the space for the convoys to come through. And that's where this light buoy was. But it had the light buoy, it had a canvas cap, which we were responsible for. It had to be put on as soon as the convoy came in, masked, you see, and then unmasked before they went out. So there we were, and they put me in command of a kike, a fishing kike, with this wonderful man, really, that called him Johnny. He was the owner. And we used to take out... We had to leave the two seamen ashore to repair bits and pieces. So I used to take turns with Gilbert. I used to go out during the daytime to attend all the nets to make sure that everything was all right and carry out repairs. And then we used to take turns at night to uncover and unmask the light before the ships came in about 1 o'clock in the morning. That was our job, you see. And outside, of course, we had the cos boats. They were the whalers. And they were doing anti-submarine searches outside with the minesweepers, two or three. And then, but near, right towards Souda Bay itself harbour, there was a string of boys. And they were supposed to be the anti-torpedo nets. There was nothing there. It was just a string of boys, you see. Well, anyhow, things went on, and fairly pleasant at the beginning. German spotter planes used to come over nearly every morning, having a look around. HMS Perth, she came in, and I got in touch with the pilot of the little aircraft they had on board. I can't remember the name of the aircraft. Very small, with a propeller at the back.
A German aircraft?
No, English. Perth, Australian Navy. What do they call them again?
Walrus.
A walrus, that's right. And he took me up to have a look round everywhere. And that was quite all right. I had a good look at all the nets. And brought me down, etc. She said it was against regulations, but that was that. And then I think it was about 3 or 4 months, oh no, much later. This must have been April, May time. He came in like this, and he'd been chased into by a German fighter, but he got away with it. And then Protector came in with these big heavy nets. And she landed these very, very heavy nets, anti-torpedo nets, on the jetty. And we had no means of pulling them out, two seamen. So I got the army to come along and pull them out with their tractors. And eventually we linked them all up. And then we got a Russian-built tug commanded by a Greek skipper, in a ship called the Irene Vernikos. And she was a large tug, very good at lifting. So I got him to come alongside, and eventually we pulled and got them all off. And then before that, we'd taken off the dummy line, you see, and we replaced the dummy line with the anti-torpedo nets. Then we felt all secure. Until, of course, one or two big ships and so-and-so came in, and then they left in a hurry. There was very little movement in the harbour then, very little. Although we had the merchantmen with ammunition, etc. There was the Maria Maersk and two or three others. We got to know these people. And then suddenly, I think it was, it must have been in the second week of May, the bombers came over. They used to come out of the sun, used to come right down and drop their bombs, of course, and off. But before that, I was, it wasn't my turn of duty, and I was in this little house where we were, and I was called out to board the Irene Vernikos and take a 5-ton clump and lay it with a wire to HMS York. She'd been actually hit by one of the Italian speedboats, you know, good Lord.
That was before you came?
No. I was there when it happened. I was taken out. You know, they took me out in the Tullow, this, whatnot. All this long after I was there. And there she was, of course, sunk on the other side. But they landed her UFOs, that's the unrotating projectiles, up, and they must have cleared the ship by then. But a submarine came alongside to give them light. And, of course, along came the bombers, and that was that. Poor old submariners. Well, then things began to hot up. And we had two sloops used to come in now and again. And they used to take off the army types from Souda Bay Fort. Not Souda Bay, rather. Jetty, and I think they were the, I can't remember the name, they were Marines and soldiers, etc. And they used to go on parties out into the Greek islands where they had airfields, the Germans had airfields, and the ambulance would be waiting for them in the morning to take off their wounded and leave the dying behind. They were commandos. And they were trained in Souda Bay Fort, commandos. Then suddenly they all left. And we were then busy because the bombing had affected some of the defences, which we repaired as best as we could. And the next thing that happened was a Greek, I think he was a destroyer. He went right under the nets and we had to go out and untangle him. Well, with bombers just gone, we didn't feel very comfortable. Anyhow, we went out and I got the hold of a local diver and we had a good look down there, sons, and we soon got him out, clipped him out, cut the nets away, and off he went merrily. And then, as I said, the bombers used to come in. And our Akak, we had a small battery on the, I think it was the northern side, on the western side, scattered around, and then another Akak battery on the other side. And they used to shoot as best they could, of course, but never seemed to bring anything down. And this seemed to go on day after day, until eventually, you see, they were just taking. The bombers were just, the Stukas were just coming in, circling like a lot of vultures, diving down and just taking these ships for target practice. And eventually, of course, all the skippers were coming ashore, they wouldn't stay on board. And then, of course, one night we'd been off just waiting for things to happen as usual. And a bomb fell next door, blew our roof in, and that was the end of us. We had to find some means of getting away and getting out, and so we then went to a little island off Souda Bay Fort, and there was a cave there, and that's where we went for shelter, in this cave, because nearly all the ships that we had seen had been sunk. Although the Maria Maersk, she was still afloat, and we had orders to anchor one of the ships that was drifting, merchant ship. And so Gilbert said, well, I suppose we've got to go. And we just managed to get into the boat, the caique, when over came these Stukas. My goodness me, just as well we didn't go, because they wanted a time, sunk her. With no time, she would have been sunk. Then the others, but the Maria Mersk was still there, but she was burning. And we saw a boat coming across from her, and we yelled at them, for goodness sake, you know, go back and put your fire out, which was a silly thing for us to say, because as soon as we said that, the Maria Mersk went up like an atom bomb, and there was nothing there. She was full of ammunition. Well, we didn't know. And so they went on their way, this crew went on their way. Then all sorts of things were happening then. Wherever you looked, there didn't seem to be anything afloat. It was just, I can't explain it really. Bomb after bomb after bomb. And I remember one occasion the Stukas came low after the jump, and we decided to have a crack at them with rifles. You can imagine us in a cave, potting rifles, and nothing happened. And anyhow, we lived off Cretan food. And then, I can't remember, one of the sloops came in, and they said, well, what do you think of the situation? Oh, I said, everything will be all right, I'm sure. And then a few days later, you see, I can't remember the dates, but it must have been getting on for late May, about the middle of May or the third week of May. And then we happened to look up, and there was a tremendous amount of aircraft coming over, towing gliders. Good Lord, what's this? Anyhow, over they came, and they seemed to go over towards Malaby. And then down came parachutes. I think white ones, red ones, could hardly remember now. And then we heard a lot of gunfire. Then we saw a lot of fighters. We thought they were ours, they weren't. There were the German following, you know, protecting them. This went on and on. And still we didn't know what was happening. And then we had orders to Gilbert, that's my senior officer, he went ashore, over to the other side. There was a water hole over there, I don't know if it went over water or not. And I was left to unmask the light for HMS Abdeel, the mine layer, the fast mine layer. She was coming in between 1 and 2 in the morning. So I went out there with the crew. We used to tie up to a boy, and the Cretan crew used to go onto the boy and unmask the boy, you see. And after all this, we always used to give him a tot of rum for his work. Well, on this occasion, he did it, and there we were, 2 o'clock in the morning. And it must have been about 2:30 when a boat came alongside, and we were ready to shoot him. We didn't know who it was. And it was the skipper of the Lanner, Jock Stewart. That's right, I knew him. A very small craft, like a drifter, really. He was doing mine clearings and mine sweeping duties. And he came alongside, he said, I've been ordered to immediately to make way to Alex. He said, because they are going to evacuate the island. He said, you better jump in and come along. You know, I said, I can't do that. I said, I've got to unmask a light. There's a mine layer down there. It just taken in, I think, the last batch of Marines for a rear guard. I said, no, I can't do that. He said, well, he said there's evacuation. I said, I don't even know about evacuation. I said, I've got to wait for orders. Must stay here to unmask the light. So he said, all right, the best of luck. So off he went. And then the Abdeel came in, can't remember the time, to go out there. Then when they got to us, the commander said, goodbye and the very best of luck. So we waved goodbye, sir. I then got the signalman to Aldous, the port wall station, ask for instructions, not knowing what was happening, you see. And back came the reply, return to anchorage and wait for further instructions. Well, that was that. So back we went into the cave for the remainder of the night. And early morning, the cack came over from the other side with a letter from Gilbert. That was my senior officer, Lieutenant Commander Gilbert, saying, make for Sparkia over the hills right away. And so, good Lord, there we were. So off we went. Myself and the two seamen, one single. Excuse me. Well, I burned up everything. Burned up all maps, charts, correspondence. Made a heap of everything. Burnt the lot, emptied out the rum keg, filled it with fresh water, and off we went. Straight over to the other side. And when we got there, we just got halfway up part of the hill, when along came these fighters. And so, good Lord, all right, I've got everybody to get round an olive tree. And we went round there with the sun. We had to wait and wait and wait. Because they were coming right down low, you see, and strafing everything you could see. And eventually I said, oh, we've had enough. We've been there about 3 or 4 hours. Everything was all clear. And so I said, come on. And off we went. We ran up this hill. And when we got to the top, we got a blast from an army sergeant telling us we shouldn't have done that. We could have been picked off any moment. Anyhow, up we went. And then there were cars and whatnot on their way. And we tried to hitchhike. No, we couldn't get a hitchhike. So off we went.
How many were with you?
Three. There were three with me. There was two seamen. One was able seaman James. Can't remember the other two names. And one signalman. So off we went, four of us. They with their rifles and me with my revolver. And we marched through the night and, of course, had to bed down in the morning. And I remember on this one occasion, we bedded down near some olive trees, I suppose, or something. Everything was quite all right. But when we woke up, a chap drew my attention to a red flag on a branch where we were. And guess what? We'd been sleeping. There was a great big bomb, like a concrete bomb, about 10 feet away. We didn't know. But anyhow, it was all right. So off we went again, second day. Then, oh good Lord, we tried to hitchhike. No, no one. Army was on its way. Over the hills, over the way to Sparkia. And then, of course, we drank the water and almost. We had not in the wheat. So we used to scrump round for bits and pieces in the fields. And then it was edible we ate. And then we ran it, as I said, ran out of water. There was an old army, it seemed to be a truck. We went there. We went to the radiator to get water. Well, it was all right, but it was oily, you know. But it was better than nothing, so we drank some of this. Went on, we went on. I don't know how many days, 3, 4 days, I think. And eventually we came to, like, on the side of a hill, and the aircraft were coming over, bombing, so we dug ourselves in there to wait. And then there were two soldiers near us, they had dug in, and whilst we were there, we heard a lot of thuds about half a mile away. And the soldiers said, they're howitzers, we're off. And off they went. I don't know what happened. I don't know whether they were shot down or nothing, but they'd just gone halfway down the hill when this fighter came over. Anyhow, we didn't risk that. We waited. Then at night, we eventually landed right down at the bottom, not far from the sea, about a mile from the sea, I should think, in Sparkia. And headquarters of somewhere near there, I think Colonel Friedberg, he'd left. Captain Morse, he was in charge of the Suda Bay, eventually, Suda Bay Force, I think he'd left. We had to give in all our rifles and revolvers, put them all in a heap. And then they said there was evacuation craft outside waiting. So eventually we had to wait one night, and I got a detail of about 30 or 40 merchantmen and three people. And then we ran down to the beach. It must have been 1 o'clock in the morning. And when we got there, there was nothing. The destroyers had gone. The evacuation was completed. That was it. Well, I didn't know. We said that the place would be capitulated. That must have been about the 1st of June, I think. And so I was a bit stubborn, and there was a little dinghy there. I said to these three chaps, they'd gone elsewhere. I'd lost them in amongst the other crowd. But anyhow, I sort of chummed up with three Australians. One was a sergeant, and there was a dinghy there. I said, look, I said, there's a little island over there, about probably 15 miles away. I said, why don't we get in the dinghy and pull along the shoreline and lay up for the night, and we'll see what happens in the morning. We might be able to get over. So they agreed. We pulled along the shoreline, then beached the dinghy, pulled it right undercover, and there was a little church about 100 yards up the hill. Up we went. We went into this church, and whilst we were there, there was an RAF pilot came in. He was one of the long-distance fighters who'd done his stuff, ditched his craft, and of course escaped and came up to where we were. And we said, well, what's happening? He said, well, son, he said, but I've got some good news. He said, the Greek so-and-so, they were taking off somebody in a Sunderland at 2 o'clock in the morning. Ah, 2 o'clock in the morning. But when was this 2 o'clock? I think it's, he said, the second day. Well, anyhow, so we had a little conference, and then this Australian sergeant, he then decided to go into Suda Bay village and have a look round. So we waited. In the meantime, there'd been an air attack. Yeah, excuse me. And he came in, and he was covered in blood. He'd been hit by shrapnel in one of the raids. Anyhow, we bandaged him up, gave him something over his forehead. And myself and another Australian, we had a look round, and we saw there was a sailing kike lying in Svalka Harbour. So we said, just the job. If we get out there, swim out there, see what they've got, see what she's like, we can then come back and get in her at night time, and off we go. So anyhow, we walked down to the beach inside the caves. We stripped off naked, and we swam towards this kike. Now, when we got about halfway, the Stukas were coming in. So there's nothing we could do about it. We had to swim back as far as we could, how fast as we could. We got back safely in the cave when these horrible Stukas sunk it. So that was that, you see.
This is in Svalka Harbour.
Svalka Harbour. So they sunk this craft, and then we then had to decide what to do again. So I said, oh, well, all is not lost. We've got some water, so. I suggest that we go into midstream.